Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue Wednesday, February 3rd. Today is an informational meeting only with invited guests. But first, I'd like to call the roll.
Representative Hernandez is excused. Representative Levy.
Here by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith's here by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is here by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. Thank you. Mr. Alanak, would you please introduce this for us? I'm opening the informational meeting on federal law changes.
Sure. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The meeting today is a presentation from some certified accountants representing the OSCPA. This is an annual presentation report that organization provides for information to the Revenue Committee. And presenting today, you have Heather Jackson and John Hawkins, and then Doug Henney is also part of the group in case there are questions. All three of them will be available for questions, but I believe most of the talking is between Heather and John. So Heather or John, if you want to go ahead and start.
Okay, I'll jump in. Good afternoon, Chair Representative Nathanson, Vice Chair Representative Pham, Vice Chair Representative Roschke, and other members of the House Committee on Revenue. For the record, my name is John Hawkins. I'm a member of the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants, their Taxation Committee. I'm a certified public accountant with the firm of Grove, Mueller & Swank in Salem, Oregon. And I appreciate the opportunity to participate in today's hearing on behalf of over 4,100 members of the Oregon Society of CPAs. I respectfully testify related to reconnect and federal legislation analysis. Thank you for having us again. As Chris mentioned, we have been doing this for a number of years before this committee. Our committee has prepared materials to present federal tax law changes that have been enacted since the legislature adjourned from their 2019 session. As a reminder, our primary objective is to be a technical resource for the legislature and your committee. Secondarily, we wish to promote taxpayer compliance and efficient tax administration by striving to keep Oregon tax law tied to the federal Internal Revenue Code. And you could move to the next slide if you'd like, and perhaps go one more. There we go, okay. Oregon's permanent or rolling reconnect to federal law only applies to the definition of federal taxable income. Oregon has had the rolling reconnect to federal taxable income since January 1 of 2011. We support the rolling reconnect, whether the tax implications to taxpayers is positive or negative. One of the more significant exceptions to this connection is the federal deduction related to the pass-through income under Internal Revenue Code Section 199A for qualified business deduction. Oregon has developed its own special tax rate for certain qualifying pass-through entities that achieves a similar result, although it may impact different taxpayers. One exception does not have a large impact on taxpayer compliance, but our society fears that many exceptions or many different connection dates can have an impact to taxpayer compliance and subsequently a cost to the administration of tax with the Department of Revenue issuing notices and performing audits. In addition to substantive law, there are some procedural differences that exist between federal and Oregon that have to do with the timing and manner of tax filings. Our committee, if you would advance the slide. Our committee has attempted to break down federal tax law changes into recommendations very similar to what we have done in prior years. This presentation is slightly different from prior years in that Oregon has not passed a fixed date conformity in 2 years. Thus, our written materials will cover federal legislation for both 2019 and 2020. However, we will focus our oral comments on 2020 changes that are listed in our recommendations. We have over 80 pages of material, therefore we may cover some items rather quickly that we feel are less important or maybe less critical for your attention. As we go through the recommendations, please do not hesitate to stop us or ask questions on items that we are talking about or items that we may skip. If you could, now just to review the recommendations, we have broken items into six categories. Recommendation A are those items that would be included in the rolling reconnect. These are items that federal law changes that impact the definition of taxable income. Items B are those items that would need a fixed date conformity to update. And there's just one or two items in that bucket. Items C are where there's no Oregon change necessary. And these are going to be primarily credits, penalties, excise taxes, administrative rules for which either don't apply to Oregon or maybe Oregon has their own administrative policies for handling these matters. So these are items that we're listing for you for your reference, but Oregon does not need to take any action to adopt these changes. Items and recommendation D are things that reference the tax code, but really do not impact tax law. So again, we're referencing these items for you, but again, no Oregon change is necessary. Then in recommendations E and F, we have summarized several items that we sometimes call are the extenders. These are some items that have a fixed date at which they will sunset. And we will cover many of these items in A and B, but we just for your reference, we summarized all items that have a sunset coming up in category E. And then in F, we have listed those extenders that have expired. For whatever reason, they were not extended and they have expired. Again, these last two categories are mainly for your reference. Next slide, please. So the legislation we're going to cover, again, we're going back to the tax bills that were passed in December of 2019. And there was the Further Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2020 that was passed on December 20th of 2019. It contained two different tax bills. One was the Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement Act of 2019, or we refer to it as the SECURE Act. We testified on this last year, and it primarily has to do with changes to retirement plans and IRA accounts, change the date for required minimum distributions and some other rules with IRAs. And a second act in the appropriations bill was the Taxpayer Certainty and Disaster Relief Act of 2019. This act contained, and we will refer to this as the Disaster Act of 2019. This act contained many of the extender bills, extender items that we discuss. Again, these are things that for whatever reason have not been made a permanent part of the tax law, but many of these items have been extended a year or two at a time for 15 or 20 years. So they've been around for a long time, but they just have never been made a permanent part of the tax law. And and here's where they were extended and at the end of 2019. Then in March 18th of 2020, the Families First Corona Response Act was passed. And we will often refer to this as the FFCRA, or I would sometimes call it the Families First Act. And what we've done is we've gotten a little fancier with you this year. We've color-coded some of our comments. So items that relate to the Family First Act will be highlighted in orange in our materials. Shortly after Families First Act, then came the Corona Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, or CARES Act, and that was passed March 27th of 2020. And items in our comments that relate to that act are highlighted in green. Then we get to December, and there is another Consolidated Appropriations Act that was passed on December 27th. And within it, again, were two separate tax bills. One is the Corona-related Tax Relief Act of 2020. You will see that in our materials referenced as the CTRA of 2020. And those items are highlighted in yellow. And then there is another Tax Certainty and Disaster Relief Act of 2020. And again, this is very much similar to the Disaster Act of 2019, which has a significant number of extenders, items that were extended for, in this case, some of them were extended 1, 2, 3 years. And we will go through those with you in a bit. So next slide, if you would, please. So this is our table of contents. Are people able to see this? Okay.
I'm seeing it all right.
All right, good, good. Yesterday at the Senate, it was a little small for some people. So if we would go to...
I see what's meant by it's a little small, but we do see the slides clearly. Okay. The presentation is working all right.
Okay, good, good. So if you would go to the next slide, we begin with recommendation A, and I'm going to turn it over to Heather to go through recommendations A.
Good afternoon, Chair Representative Nathanson, Vice Chair Representative Fong, and Vice Chair Representative Bransky, and members of the House Committee on Revenue. For the record, my name is Heather Jackson, and I'm a member of the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants Taxation Committee. I'm a certified public accountant practicing in Portland, Oregon, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here again with you this year. We're going to start with recommendation A, and just kind of as a reminder, I know we just went through them, but recommendation A is the permanent connection or rolling reconnect. So these items, if nothing's done, where Oregon is already connected to. So I'm going to walk you through kind of the highlights out of this section. Again, if there's ones that you have questions about or ones I'm skipping, just please let me know and we can go back and discuss them. If you could go to the next slide, please. To start us off, we're going to talk about the business loss or NOLs. In this section, at the very top, we say for individuals. That's because for individuals, we are tied at taxable income, and that includes the NOLs. In section B, you're going to find the similar wording, but that's for corporations because that we are not tied to. Oregon has its own rules. So this one is just for individuals and the individual NOL rules. Okay, next slide, please. The business interest limitation. So this one is the adjusting of the business interest limitation from 30% to 50% for years of 19 and 20. Then next slide. The government provided relief funds, loans, and grants. This is the PPP, which we will mention a few times throughout the presentation, but this specific act and these section numbers are for the rule that says the PPP loans will not be considered treated as income for income tax purposes. All right, next slide, please. The top one here is limitation on business losses. This is where they removed the excess business losses that had been in place starting in 18. They've now been removed for 18, 19, and 20. So this is kind of going back to what it used to be prior to the act actually going in place in 18. The next one down is qualified improvement property. This allows 100% bonus depreciation for qualified improvement property starting from January 1, 2018. This one section got left off when they did the update in 2018, so this is just kind of going back and getting that one piece picked up. On to page 12. This is about cafeteria and mid-year changes. This is kind of in the past, but this is basically allowing the cafeteria plans to have change in elections and things like that to give people some benefits during COVID. Next slide. The one in green, the first one in green, the inclusion of certain over-the-counter medical products, qualified medical expenses. This is for your HSAs and flex spending accounts and accountable plans. They just added a few more products to what is allowed to be used for the monies being allowed to be used for. The telehealth services is the next one. This just allows for telehealth to be used for 2020 as people were not going into the doctors, they were using telehealth services. On to the next slide, please. The charitable contribution deduction. This one we'll talk about now and we'll cover it again in a little bit. This is for the year 2020. It allows for a $300 charitable contribution deduction for above the line taxpayers who do not itemize. So those who take the standard deduction can get an extra $300 to their tax return deductions. And then this also provided an increase for the charitable contribution limit that was 60%. Okay. Next slide. The top one, teacher expense deduction. This one is allowing teachers to take the deduction for PPE and other supplies to prevent the spread of COVID-19 to their deduction that they get on the first page. The second one on the page, the deduction for expenses paid with the PPP loan proceeds. This is the one that allows taxpayers to deduct the expenses that they use to also use to apply for forgiveness. So the loans are forgivable and the deduction is still there for those expenses. The next two are about grants and financial aid assistance, just kind of clarifying some more COVID benefits for them. The next slide. Slide 16 through 28 cover retirement plans. A lot of these are date changes in the past or things that just allowed more flexibility during the year to help retirement plan, people seeking retirement funds and those kind of things. We're gonna hit highlights out of them, but not all of the items on this, the next few pages. So if we could go to page or slide 19. This one at the bottom, tax favored withdrawals from retirement plans. This is allowing the 10% penalty if it's COVID related to be not applied to those distributions. It also allows for distributions up to $100,000 to be either spread over 3 years if you're paying the taxes on it, or actually to be repaid in 3 years. So this one's specifically on just the withdrawals that happened in or before December 31st, 2020. On to slide 23. This one, the bottom one here, is loans from retirement plans. So in the past, you've always been limited to $50,000 as the loan maximum that you can take. For 2020, they increased it to $100,000. So that was the major change on that one. If we could go to slide 26, please. On the bottom one here, the temporary waiver of required minimum distribution rules. So this one put into place for 2020 that IRA and minimum distribution rules did not apply. So no one had to take money out of their IRA in 2020. As of right now, 2021 IRA or the minimum required distributions are back. Then on to slide 29, please. So that covers kind of the highlights of the retirement, not getting into the weeds too much with all the retirement rules and, you know, changes for the plan. So to make it a little more flexible, that was where the highlights of the changes within the retirement plans. Now we're moving on to deductions. So the top
let's pause a moment since this is kind of the end of a section. I'd like to know if anyone on the committee has a question or comment now. It also gives Ms. Jackson a moment to catch her breath.
Thank you.
Rep. Pham.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have a question about just this particular recommendation. I think we all know that any policy is going to have some people who benefit and some people who will be harmed. For example, in tax policy, we can have, if it's a regressive policy, it can actually make the wealthiest wealthier, and it may impact the poor as well. I'm curious. Well, one concern I have is that in connecting automatically with the federal tax changes, that we're essentially handing over some of our independence to be able to craft tax policy that represents our values and wanting to make sure that we're benefiting the groups that we want to benefit and encourage. So my question is, in recommending that we do this permanent connection or rolling reconnect, do you consider the beneficiaries of these policies? Are there certain groups that benefit disproportionately from some of these federal tax changes?
The big thing we think about when we recommend continuing rolling reconnect is, again, like you mentioned, some people benefit, some people don't. The biggest thing about it is the state of Oregon would have to come through on all of tax laws and come up with their own tax laws to be able to disconnect. So in the sense of just protecting people in general, including the Oregon itself, there would be a lot of work needed to go and disconnect and create our own tax law. So that's the biggest reason for our reconnect and our recommendation to reconnect. It also allows, you know, you guys, the state of Oregon gets the good with the bad. When we kind of looked at this a couple of years ago, Oregon came out ahead in some ways on some of the new tax law changes that happened back in 2018. So there are some things that you guys are benefiting from. Another benefit is the stimulus money that everyone got is getting on their 2020 tax return. If the taxpayer is able to deduct their federal income taxes on the state return, that is reduced by those stimulus checks that people received. So again, there's pros and cons to a lot of things, and every rule has a lot of things that we have to think about before we could just make a decision to connect or not to connect.
Rep. Pham, you're muted.
I just wanted to ask a clarifying question, Chair Nathanson. I just wanted to summarize to make sure I understand.
That's fine.
Thank you. So what I'm hearing is that it's a lot because of the amount of extra labor that it would cost Oregon to be able to manage our own tax system. And essentially the kind of responsibility that comes with the power of shaping our own tax system.
Right. That is part of it, yes.
It is a lot. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, I don't see any other questions. Let's go ahead. Okay. Rep. Pham, did you have another question? I don't hear you again.
I apologize. I need to master the mute button. I just wanted to ask thank you, Madam Chair. I did say that earlier. Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to ask the the LRO, if we might be able to get some numbers on some of these recommendations. I know that they are, I think, are working on it, but I just wanted to officially make the request for some of the total revenue that would be lost in each of these deductions that have been listed under recommendation A. Is that a question I could ask LRO if they are working on, or if I could put that request in?
Sure. And you may be familiar with, there was a LRO study many months ago in 2020 on the various provisions of the CARES Act. And as Ms. Jackson noted, some things there's a net gain or a gain for Oregon revenue. In some cases, there's a loss for Oregon revenue. The net was a loss, but there were pluses and minuses. And LRO did analyze each one of those provisions. But sure, Mr. Allenack, do you have a comment on whether you would be able to analyze all of these individual recommendations in the document?
Yes, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Pham. Yeah, we have that report, and I can send that link. That was released back in May. The numbers might be a little bit dated, but it gives that sense. And we are currently working on estimates for the Consolidated Appropriations Act that was passed at the end of December. We have some different methods, but we are working on those issues to get the committee the numbers. And they will also be incorporated in the revenue forecast to be released on the 24th. So we're talking with OEA about it as well. So we're actively working on that this month, Madam Vice Chair.
And when you mention being incorporated into a revenue forecast, what a forecast it takes into account is current law, not any anticipated changes either in Oregon or at the federal level. It can only work with what is on the books now. Is that correct?
That's correct for Oregon law. For Oregon law, it's a current law forecast. OEA cannot make any assumptions about what the state legislature would do or not do. It's a little bit grayer at the federal level in terms of, I mean, we're starting to stray into the process for that forecast, but they subscribe to a national forecasting company, and that's often the core or starting point of their forecast. And embedded within that will be certain assumptions of what Congress has done or will be doing and those kinds of things. So it's a little bit, the best way to describe it is it's grayer for federal law, but it is an absolute for Oregon law.
Okay, that's very helpful, thank you. And I remember noting it was quite something to learn last fall that an assumption of a stimulus, a federal stimulus, had been baked into a forecast. And then if it doesn't materialize, what does that mean?
And that's one of the questions we have right now with the Consolidated Appropriations Act passed in December. Okay, well, how much of that was embedded in the December forecast? And so we're talking with OEA to try and tease some of that out.
Thank you very much. Rep. Pham, does that complete your questions?
Okay. Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, all right, we can move on after this slide now, thanks.
Okay, thank you. So at the top of the slide is the medical expense deduction. This one has been 7.5%. It went up to 10% for several years, and it's moved back to 7.5% for kind of 19 and 20 for sure. And then it's also been made permanent. So the 7.5% is made permanent, and we'll note that later in our presentation as well, but that one's kind of been fixed at 7.5%. The one that we see a lot of activity on every year is the benefits provided to volunteer firefighters and emergency medical responders, and the exclusion of their some of their benefits from taxable income. That just got moved forward 1 year. So they each year it seems to get added a year. So we just added another year. If you go to the next slide, you'll see that the prior year, the one that was in the last year's act, is there in white, just like we kind of mentioned before. The transition from tuition deduction to increased income on lifetime learning credit. So this one took the tuition and related expense deduction and repealed it. And in place of it, or kind of in lieu of it, is they've increased the phase out for the lifetime learning credit income qualifications. Next slide, please. The top four here, the discharge of qualified principal resident indebtedness, the 7-year recovery period for motorsports complexes, the qualified expenses for TV, film, and live theater, and the empowerment zones, all got extended through December 31st, 2025. The next one on the page is exclusion for employer payments of student loans. So the benefit that employers have provided for paying tuition for their employees has been expanded to include student loan repayments, and that was originally for just 2020, and it's now been extended through December 31st, 2025. The mortgage insurance premiums was extended one more year, so people who have a insurance premium on their mortgage, it's deductible, so that one's still in place. Next page, please. The top two here, the depreciation on racehorses and depreciation on business property in the Indian reservations, all got moved forward one year. So now these rules apply through December 31st, 2021. The next one I want to cover is on page 33. So move forward one slide. The middle one here on this page is deduction for business meals. This is taking business meals that are 50% deductible in 2020 and making them fully deductible in 2021 and 2022 to assist in the restaurant industry. The next one is charitable contribution deduction. So starting in 2021, you get the same $300 that we talked about earlier for a single individual filer, and $600 for a joint filer on an above-the-line charitable deduction for people who don't itemize. The other part of this is for 2020 and 2021, they moved the charitable contribution limit from 60% to 100%. The next one down is disaster relief contributions made by corporations. So if a corporation makes a charitable contribution for a disaster relief, they get 100% of their deduction up to their taxable, 100% of their taxable income. So that's a major increase for them. Next slide. The health and dependent care flexible spending arrangements. This is, again, just changing dates or providing more time for people to get the money used, change elections and such for the 2020 year and into 2021. Next slide, please. The special disaster related rules for retirement funds. We've covered this kind of when I kind of highlighted all the retirement rules for it, but this just came through and put it into the Disaster Act in a little more formal way. And then if you can go to slide 37, that was kind of the end of it. All those pages were all the same rule. And then starting with the multi-employer plan and pooled plans, this is the SECURE Act. So pages 37 through 47 are all the SECURE Act, and we weren't covering those since we presented on them last year, but they are still what was in A last year is in A again this year, and they're presented right here. So with that, I am going to turn it back over to John to cover recommendation B.
Thank you, Heather. Chair Nathanson, if I could respond a little bit to Representative Phan's question about Reconnect.
Sure.
I have a little more gray hair than Heather. I'm beginning my 35th tax season this year. And so I remember practicing back in the days before we had the rolling reconnect, and actually when the legislature met only every other year. And the dilemmas that we had as tax practitioners and as taxpayers had was when there was a federal law change, and then tax season comes along, Oregon has not yet adopted those rules. How do we file the Oregon return? And I know back in those days, Oregon Department of Revenue's computer wasn't quite as good as it is today. We might assume that Oregon was going to reconnect and file the return, assuming that a reconnect would happen. But there's this timing that we get into, particularly where tax season is now through April 15th, and you won't adjourn your session until May, June or so. And we're in this limbo of what tax rules do we follow as we file our tax returns right now. So I think part of our comments here and part of our reason for supporting a rolling reconnect is just for, efficiency and filing returns and to avoid mistakes that taxpayers might make and confusion as to what rule applies.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay. So I'm going to get into recommendations B, and these are items that do not tie to the definition of taxable income. But if Oregon wanted to follow them, they would have to adopt some kind of change. And if you could go next slide. Heather's already commented on the fact that we had changes in net operating loss rules that allowed us to carry back net operating losses 5 years for individuals. Oregon has already disconnected from the NOL carrybacks for corporations. So corporations do not get the benefit of that rule, and Oregon would have to specially enact something in order for corporations to do some of these things that are listed here that happen in the federal law allowing net operating loss carrybacks. If you go next slide. The middle item is there are limitations on corporations for carrying forward NOLs if they've had an ownership change. And here is where the CARES Act made a very minor modification. If there was an ownership change that related to a guarantee of a loan, then they would not count that ownership change as having the result of limiting the amount of a net operating loss carry forward that a corporation could have. Again, it's kind of narrow rule, but nonetheless, one that's out there. The third item here, I had to actually kind of scratch my head a little bit with this one. There are federally backed mortgages that are out there as securities. And there are a couple of entities, and if you would, next slide. There are things called real estate mortgage investment conduits that often buy these securities and then turn around and are REMICs are traded like a stock in some ways. There are also real estate investment trust or REITs that also buy some of these federally backed mortgage packages. And there was a prohibited transaction for a REIT or a REMIC to enter into a forbearance agreement on a loan that was in default. And what this does is that it gives a safe harbor and an exception to the prohibited transaction rules that exist for these entities if they enter into a forbearance. I mention this because, you know, this does not reference federal taxable income, but Oregon ORS 314- 314.260 also has its own prohibited transaction rules on REMICs and REITs. And, if federal is giving a safe harbor for some of these forbearance agreements, this might be something that Oregon might want to consider as well. So those three items are the only ones that we have in recommendation B.
So, okay, before we move on past that, and before we get too much farther, Representative Smith, did you have a question that I didn't catch in time?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if our panelists could share with us the role that predictability plays, both with the, you know, the middle class family and the small business owners, as it relates to, you know, modifying tax policy. Because I heard a comment earlier from Representative Fong that I strongly agree with, that wouldn't it be nice for Oregon to have policy that represents Oregon values? But then I try to reconcile that with how do we ensure predictability for those who are doing tax planning? And so I just wonder if they had any comments on the role predictability plays in these kind of decisions.
Well, I guess that's my feeling of why the rolling reconnect is so is good, is taxpayer friendly. It does give us more predictability. You know, when Congress makes a change, and seems like here lately it's always in December, but frequently there are tax acts that happen. I remember many years where the Oregon legislature would adjourn and then shortly thereafter would be a federal tax bill. And we would have uncertainty about would those rules apply to Oregon taxpayers until the legislature met that next year. So we were in limbo for a year. So I just, again, that's one reason why, you know, the society really promotes the rolling reconnect. I understand your concerns with, you're delegating some of your authority to the federal government. But I think for most taxpayers, it does give them a better understanding of what they can expect. And when we're doing planning with clients in December, this December was very difficult because we didn't know until December 28th how PPP loans were going to be treated. And I was giving many of my clients, here's what your tax bill will be in April if this happens, and here's what your tax bill will be if the other thing happens. And I'd rather not be giving people two or three scenarios of what might be their tax bill.
Yeah, and so Madam Chair, I would just add to that. To me, I understand and agree with the gentleman who just spoke. I think in addition to that, there's an element of fairness. And again, particularly among the middle class who, you know, perhaps have made financial decisions based upon current tax policy and the assumption that there will be a connection. And then when we deviate off of that, that uncertainty begins. And as Representative Fong was sharing, some are winners and some are losers. And sometimes that's through no fault of anyone other than elected officials. So I would just hope as we look at this conversation, we do take into consideration predictability and for folks. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Rep. Smith. Mr. Hawkins, we're ready to move to the next slide.
Okay, let's go to the next slide. Recommendation C. These are items where there's no Oregon change necessary. And primarily, these are going to be credits or penalties or administrative rules that Oregon already has in place their own rules. So if you go to the next slide. So the first item was the Family First Act gave credits to employers for sick pay that they paid to employees if they were home sick with COVID, or if they were home caring for a family member who had COVID. Again, this is a payroll tax credit that was only at the federal level. would not have any impact on Oregon. The second item was minimum tax credits for corporations. Again, tax credit does not impact Oregon. The last item on this page in yellow just allowed the IRS to share taxpayer information with the Department of Education for the purposes of student loan, student aid packages. Next slide, please. And that continues on the next page. The green area here, quick refunds. I'm sorry, go back one, please. The quick refunds. Here again, this was the ability to get a quick refund from the IRS for those NOL carrybacks. And if I just briefly just, here's a situation where the way the IRS administratively treats NOL carrybacks is different than the way Oregon does it. The IRS has a special form, a 1045 that they use for individuals or 1139 that they use for corporations. And if those are filed within a fairly narrow window of time, the IRS must issue the refund within 90 days. So here, when they did the change for the five-year carryback, they gave us an extension of time to use that form for 2018 NOLs to June 30 of 2020. And this was also at a time when I heard that the IRS had 20 million pieces of unopened mail. So to avoid our NOL carrybacks getting caught at the back of that pile of mail, they gave us a special fax number for faxing those in. So I know that for us, we filed all of our 2018 NOL carrybacks by June of last year. And if we did the federal, we also did the Oregon. And then go to the next slide for 2019 NOLs. They also gave us a fax number to file those if we filed them before December 31 of 2020. So it's just a little different process there between Oregon and federal. Recovery rebates, these are the stimulus checks that people are getting. The one in green was the first round that happened back in April, May, and there was $1,200 per person plus an amount for children. And then in the yellow is the second round of economic impact payments or stimulus checks that were issued. And these were $600 per person. And again, Heather's already commented that this is a credit against their 2020 tax. And so, you know, to the extent that people deduct their federal tax on their Oregon return, this is going to be a reduction in that Oregon deduction. I don't know if I said that right. It will be a reduction. It will reduce that Oregon deduction. Next slide. Again, getting it the NOLs, and this has to do with foreign corporations. I'm going to skip the reference there to 965. There's credits for railroad track maintenance. Next slide, please. As you see here, we get into some excise taxes with distilled spirits, some other items. The new markets tax credit was extended. Next slide. Again, a number of credits here. Some of these are energy credits the federal government provides. Again, being a credit, does not impact taxable income, does not impact Oregon tax law. Next slide, please. Again, more credits. Give you just a moment to scan that. And then next slide. Again, more energy credits, two-wheel plug-in electric vehicle credit, residential energy efficient property credit. There's a credit that you can get for adding insulation, windows, et cetera, to your home on the federal side. Next slide. Low-income housing credits, and this last one, again, it's a federal credit. It does not impact Oregon, but there is a payroll tax credit that if employers retained employees, there is a credit they can take on their federal employment tax returns to help offset the cost of maybe retaining employees where there was maybe less work for them to do. Next slide. And it continues on with the employee retention credit, and the refundable child credit, there's some changes there. The rest of this, if you can go next slide, the areas here in white all have to do with changes that were made in Secure Act. That was over a year ago. So these all have to do with various penalties and related to retirement plans. So next slide. And I'll let you do next slide. So again, just credits, things that do not impact Oregon. Next slide. And I think that's the end of this section. Next slide. Yes. So any questions about what I just covered?
I'll let you know if we have one. Rep Smith has one now.
Yes, he does.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is actually for Chris, if I may ask our staff a quick question. So Mr. Alanek, I'm going to ask a question that if we weren't friends would come across as not very nice. I have a question. If we were to write our own tax policy, wouldn't we need to beef up your office with additional professionals? When I think about IRS tax code and the implementation of IRS tax code, I'm envisioning hundreds, if not a couple thousand, federal employees going through this data, determining the consequences, et cetera. And you're quite efficient with the staff you have, but I'm not sure you would have the personnel to implement major, major changes in a, let's say, a complete disconnect. Can you, and again, I'd say that with all due respect, because I think the world of you and your team, but I just don't think there's enough of it. Can you share some insight on that?
Yeah, I think if you were talking about completely from scratch, Oregon is going to go entirely, like we take the, we disconnect, we take the IRC, we ignore it, like we pretend the federal code doesn't exist. And then how do we establish a funding system to meet the needs of the general fund and the demand for public goods and services? So I think on a question like that, it gets me thinking about our federal counterparts, the Joint Committee on Taxation, and I believe their office, contained in their office, you have economists, CPAs, and lawyers. And so there would be some sort of mix of a lot of people trying to consider all different aspects. Our team is pretty small, and we rely on the Department of Revenue. That's another entity that could possibly significantly be affected. And we rely on CPAs like you're hearing today. We don't have any accountants in our office. And then we also work with Ledge Counsel. And Ledge Counsel, they have just a couple of folks that focus on tax law. So I think the under a scenario of starting genuinely from scratch on all fronts, to your point, the impacts for staffing could be significant.
And again, Madam Chair, I ask my question with all due respect because I think these folks are the best. Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
Thanks.
So I'm switching over to Heather. I messed up yesterday with the Senate, so I got this right today. Heather's going to do Section D.
Alrighty. Just as a reminder, recommendation D is all the things that may reference the tax code but have no impact to tax law, which means they're not going to impact Oregon, they're not going to impact anything in the actual tax law, but we're going to break them down and go over them extremely quickly with you. Next slide, please. The first one here is talking about nonprofits and their loans and grants that they're receiving through the CARES. It goes into technical details. The bottom one is about an excise tax. Next slide, please. It's a continuation at the top. The next one on this thing is the refund, which is, again, an excise tax for foreign production. Next slide. The top one is a suspension of an excise tax for aviation. The next almost page and a half are COVID-related policies, meaning they're strictly CARES Act, their guidance on healthcare issues, their guidance on vaccines. So again, no impact to tax law. Next slide, please. This one is the Family First Act and the CTRA of 2020. Again, all relating to CARES and the COVID and, you know, how to report things for basically the COVID virus. Next slide, please. And then we're on to back to the SECURES Act, which is the act from 2 years ago. So the next, this page and the next page are white, and these were covered in last year's presentation. So next slide, please. And so that is this end of section D. I'm going to turn it back over to John to do recommendation E. You're muted, John.
I think that's the favorite phrase of 2020, you're muted. Madam Chair, I'm going to cover recommendations E. And again, some of these items we have already covered, but we're trying to give you, if nothing else, a resource here, a reference that you can look at and give a listing of several items that have a fixed date that they're going to sunset unless there's some federal change. And the first two or three are some deductions. The first one relates to, it's one section 163J, which is the interest deduction limitation. And what this does is that the computation of adjusted taxable income is made without including a deduction for depreciation, amortization, or depletion for until 2021. The second item has to do with GILTI, which is the Global Intangible Low Tax Income. I am not a foreign tax expert. I think Chris knows more about this than I do. I'm going to skip that. Heather's already talked a little bit about the benefits to volunteer firefighters. That was actually extended permanently. They can get up to $50 a month as a stipend, and they don't have to include that as income. And then as you look at this list, if it's got a code section number that's 60 or less, it's a credit. And so like the research tax credit, it finally got extended permanently. I think the research credit has been around as long as I've been in practice. And it's always, they just kick the can down the road a year or two at a time, but they finally made it permanent. But there's just a number of energy credits. If you could go to the next slide. You know, the energy efficient home that got extended to 2021. So we just listed here for your reference, number of items that will have a fixed date at which they will expire. You can go to the next credit, the next slide, I'm sorry. Here we get into some items that are deductions. For example, kind of in the middle of the page, there's 5-year depreciation life for farm machinery and equipment that was made permanent for items that were placed in service after 2017. There was an increase in the charitable contributions deduction. Most of my career, it has been 50% of your adjusted gross income was the limit you could take for charitable contributions. That has been increased to 60% through 2025. There's a separate item somewhere else that just for 20 and 21, you can deduct up to 100% if it's a cash contribution for a COVID-related charity. I would just say, I'm not going to go through this line by line. We've been at this an hour. I don't want people's eyes to glaze over. But there's a number of items here. And if you could just run through some of the slides. These are all items that have some type of fixed date that they will expire. And some of these are credits or excise taxes. So you just keep going. And one more slide. And that's the end of it. So again, this is more or less, some of these items we've discussed already in our earlier sections. We just wanted to provide this as a reference for you. Now, if you go to the next slide, it's recommendations F. And next slide again, these are items that did not get extended. These are items that have died. The first item, nuclear power facilities, is a credit. The second one, I just want to bring to your attention, the qualified tuition deduction has been repealed as of 2020. So going into the 2021 year, for many of my clients, we often would take credits, the American Opportunities Tax Credit, for the tuition expenses they have with their children. But when we came to the Oregon return, we were allowed to take this deduction up to $4,000 on the Oregon return. With this deduction going away for federal, it also goes away for Oregon. So here's a situation where Oregon does not provide a tax benefit for college tuition expenses. There's alimony. What happened with this is that for years, the person paying alimony could deduct it. The person receiving alimony would recognize it as income. The inspector general did a look and found that many, many millions of dollars were being deducted for alimony paid, and very few dollars were being recognized as alimony received. So what they did is they fixed it by taking away the deduction and taking away the fact that the person receiving would have to pick it up as income. And again, it's just this one page, but this is just for your reference, a list of those items that have recently expired. So we have got to the end of our presentation, the end of our slides, and everyone's still awake. So thank you.
we are indeed awake. we were listening. Thank you very much. I have a question about, and Rep Marsh and Rep Smith, I see you also have questions. I'm going to ask one real quick here on some of the things that you described as extenders and others that have gone away. One of the things that interests me is sometimes tax expenditures, credits, deductions, exemptions, and so forth. Sometimes those are to acknowledge an economic situation for the taxpayer And it's like, we're sorry that you're in this situation. And so we're giving you a break on something. It's just right. a strict money thing. Other times it's there and it's there to change behavior, to provide an incentive to do something or maybe to not do something. Mm-hmm. However, even if it wasn't designed to affect a behavior, it may have that effect. So it would be interesting to note, I do want to get to the questions next from Representatives Marsh and Smith, but over the next few minutes, or maybe over the next few weeks, I'd like you to let us know if there are certain things where we could expect certain taxpayer behavior change because one of these things went away, whatever it was. Okay, Representative Marsh, you're first, and then Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I want to first thank you for coming. We are always so grateful when you come and go through this very detailed report. I remember, having been on this committee for a few years now, I do remember a few reports where you just skated through it in no time, but 2020 was not that kind of year. And as I look through the sections of the report, I'm struck, even the sections that have very little to do with the state, that is changes that were made at the federal level that we don't really have to do much about, it must be a very challenging year for CPAs. And I just wondered if you wanted to comment on how businesses are managing. I mean, even good things have a cost in terms of overhead that you have to manage. I'm just wondering if you could comment on just how businesses are managing to assess and then implement all of these changes.
I'll go first here, let Heather join me, but as I mentioned, this is my 35th tax season. Last year was the most difficult year of my practice ever. It was, you know, and much of it had to do with, you know, I think for the month of April after the CARES Act came out, I don't think I touched a tax return for a month. All I was trying to do is reach out to my business clients, let them know about the PPP loans, let them know about some of these tax credits that were available. excuse me. And it was helping them, and for many of them, it was just helping them to keep their doors open and mm-hmm. Keep their employees employed. And so there was a lot of time this last year. We've had to adapt, learn how to do Teams. I mean, that's how we conduct our staff meetings and how I conduct a lot of my client meetings these days. And we've learned to do some client seminars with, like this. Getting the information out to taxpayers for them to take advantage of some of these provisions has been a goal. We hear that CPAs are businesses' most trusted advisor, and we try to live up to that reputation, and we just try to help them as much as we can, and it's been challenging.
Yeah.
So
thank
one
you.
Thing I would add to John is when we say businesses, it's also your Schedule C's, you know, it's also your rentals, your farms, just making sure you make sure that you've touched everyone that gets and needs to be touched. It's been almost a full-time job keeping one, our staff appraised in our own firm of changes and rule changes, but also we've done, I don't even know how many webinars this year from our firm, trying to get the word out because we do mass emails, but not everyone has email, you know. It's been a challenge to keep up with even the smaller companies and the smaller businesses, the Schedule C's and F's and E's that, you know, also need the information and are trying to struggle just as much as everyone else. So it's been a year of information providing compared to actual tax planning that happened kind of in a rush situation at the end of the year.
Right. Thank you.
Before I call on Rep. Smith, Ms. Jackson, there's something you said that reminds me, you were referring to as some businesses or individuals may not have email or may not receive it or pay attention to it, I get very concerned about our very small businesses. As we've heard in other hearings on anything from having a liquor license to a childcare facility, you know, sometimes if you have a very small business, you're working all or part of 7 days a week. And you're the person who has to figure out how to buy the replacement light bulb, and you're making your weekly report or monthly report to some agency, and you're the one serving the public at the counter, and you're the one ordering the stuff that you need to come in. It's just, I worry even more about the smallest firms that don't have the accounting department and the legal counsel on call and the HR office.
I will say, some of it is I post a lot, and I do a lot of community outreach in the sense I do presentations. But one of the things that we found most amazing is not only are our clients partaking in our webinars, but our people that we don't even interact with, like they're joining our webinars because they hear about them through me or through another person in our firm. So I feel like, you know, it's hard to get the information out to them, but at the same time, I feel like we're making some headway compared to what we've done in years past, which I think is great. I don't think it's enough, but I think it's a start.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I really want to associate myself with your comments and those of Representative Marsh. Representative Marsh actually took most of what I wanted to ask away from me, but I do want to make a request. One, if there's going to be a quiz on this material, I would like it to be graded on a curve. And second, I would like Mr. Alanak to be my study buddy, because I'm telling you, this is a lot of fun. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, golly.
I will respond to you that, if I may, I felt like I've been drinking from a fire hose most of this last year. It's been the volume of material coming at us is extensive, and it's coming fast. So I understand your feelings.
Representative Levy.
I will tell you that when I graduated from Portland State, one of my opportunities for job interviews was to go to work for a financial firm and do investment counseling. But also in investment counseling, they wanted me to be able to help counsel people on how to do their taxes. And I didn't even interview for that job because of exactly what you just showed us, because I knew that it was going to mean, you know, another 2 years worth of education working for this firm before I would even be able to understand what you've just presented. So I incredibly appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the committee? Mr. Alanak, do you have any other thoughts about information that we've just received in this presentation?
I think this is a start for the topic. I mean, you got a lot of really great detailed information. Both John and Heather, I think, did a great job again. And then it'll continue tomorrow with a little another informational section on kind of laying the foundation for what it means to connect to federal law and some of the terminology, just in case there is that quiz that Rep. Smith was talking about, so that some of these terms get to be, well, maybe not second nature, but a little more familiar. So as you're discussing the policies that will inevitably come up, the Revenue Committee is in a much better position to discuss those.
Thank you. So everyone who's here with us, Mr. Hawkins, Ms. Jackson, Mr. Haney, thank you so much for this presentation today. I don't see any additional questions for the panel. I'm closing the informational meeting now on federal law changes with our guests from the Certified Public Accountants.
Thank you.
Mr. Alanek, is there anything before we adjourn today? You've already announced our meeting tomorrow. Thank you.
I believe that wraps it up for today.
Okay. Thanks, everybody. See you tomorrow. We're adjourned.
Thank you.